The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios, welcome to our top stories this hour. And we don't like replaying stuff we did earlier in the show. It's pretty rare when we do that. But I had the rarest of opportunities. One of the only radio interviews that Paul Allen ever did was on our show. And I want to replay it for you. We played it at noon today, and I want to replay it for you coming up in just a few minutes here. So if you did not have a chance to hear it the first time around, the time I got to sit down with Paul Allen, I wonder if he listened to our pre- and post-game shows when he would go to the games. I hope he did. I hope he enjoyed that.
It's a cool thing to think about.
Yeah. But I mentioned to you at the beginning of the show that so many, you know, and we talked to him in this interview, people are going to hear it. The Seahawks were gone to Los Angeles. And I tell you, that Ken Behring, I've told you my story with him, right?
I believe so, but it's probably worth repeating.
I was covering the Seahawks for Q13. And Ken Behring was trying to get a new stadium. He either wanted, what he really wanted was a major remodel of the Kingdom, which I think would have been a disaster. And so
the Kingdom was a pit.
And his son David was the team president. And so I arranged to do a one-on-one with David Behring. And they escorted me into a conference room at the Seahawks headquarters in Kirkland. And I've got my Q13 photographer with me, and sitting right next to the conference table where we're doing the interview are kind of the schematics and the drawings for the stadium that they wanted to get built, and they're sitting right there. So we, you know, took some shots of that before the interview, and I included that in the story. And Ken Behring banned me from the Seahawks facility.
Really?
Yeah. He said that I was not allowed to set foot, or maybe it was David Behring. I think it was David, team president. I was not allowed to set foot in the Seahawks facility because I had violated some trust. It was sitting right next to the conference table.
And you were spilling the beans like, oh.
No, they'd been talking. I mean, I talked to him about the stadium they wanted to build. And so I had some, you know, cover video as he's talking, and I'm showing some of these pictures. And My dear friend, Gary Wright, who the press box at CenturyLink Field is the Gary Wright press box. And Gary Wright's one of those guys who, when I was an 18-year-old intern for an Everett radio station, when I had a Cairo talk show and was doing Seahawks pre and post, treated me the exact same.
Right.
Whatever station I was at in life.
Which basically with respect.
Yes. And he saved me from the Behrings.
But you know, the image that I always think see in my head when I think of how the Seahawks had moved is, you know, people actually trying to block the moving van. I mean, where you can see.
Yeah, there were like five guys standing in front of this huge cab.
Yes.
Yeah, like they're going to be able to stop it. Yeah, it was crazy. So, and Gary Wright, the Seahawks vice president who had several interactions with Paul Allen, he's going to join us in just a couple minutes here as well. But let me start with this Big Lead exclusive.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
And that is when the Seahawks made the Super Bowl back at the end of the 2005 season, February 2006 in Detroit. And I'm pretty sure it was Gary Wright who made this happen. Paul Allen, who never did interviews, he came and sat down with me on our show a couple of days before the Super Bowl. And it was one of the rarest of thrills on my show or in my career. And I talked to him about saving the team in Seattle. Here was my Super Bowl interview with Paul Allen.
Talk about this week. I mean, this has to be something else for you to be part of the Super Bowl week with your team.
It's just amazing. The people out here in Detroit have been so welcoming. Today I was fortunate to go out to practice and watch the team prepare, and it was the last full practice. We have, a run through tomorrow and a team photo tomorrow. But just how focused the guys are out there. Just that quiet confidence that they have, which is great talking to some of the coaching staff. And And it's going to be exciting on Sunday. And I know everyone in the Northwest will probably be watching.
One of the things you were talking about with me was growing up, going to Husky Stadium, wanting to feel that kind of sentiment surrounding a team. At noon today, we carried live the rally in Westlake Center, and the city is feeling that passion now.
You know, that's been one of the incredibly heartwarming things about this year for me, is just to see all the Seahawks fans that have been patiently waiting for years for a season like this, and to have it really happen, and to be here in the Super Bowl. I think, you know, I'm still pinching myself this week. I'm sure a lot of the fans are out there too, but just to see all that community support, see all the blue everywhere, the 12s that have appeared all over the city, the rallies that have taken place, it's just wonderful.
Everyone thought of you as a basketball guy. Has football replaced basketball as a passion? Has it equaled basketball as a passion for you?
You know, obviously, I think the first point I would make is that, you know, I went to football games as a kid, I think before I ever went to a basketball game, and I became a big NBA fan when the Sonics won the championship back in the late 70s, when we first moved Microsoft up to Seattle from Albuquerque. But obviously in basketball you have a lot more games, and in football these playoff games are so intense because it's one game up or down. You either keep going in the playoffs or in this case this last game advanced to the Super Bowl. So the games are incredibly intense, and there's nothing like the Super Bowl in sports in the U.S. It's the pinnacle of press coverage, fan enthusiasm, and all that. So it's just amazing to be here with the team.
We're talking with Seahawks owner Paul Allen, who's joining us live here in Detroit. What I've said about the Super Bowl, Paul, and I'm sure you're feeling some of this now, it is like a laser beam of energy that's focused. There is all of this buildup and anticipation, and once that ball is kicked on Sunday, it is going to unleash this torrent of pent-up anticipation and energy. And as you just said, there really isn't too much like this in the American landscape.
Yeah, and some of the coaches were even mentioning today that, you know, the practices this week, you know, as the week has worn on, have been a little extra intense. I think, you know, the players certainly feel that. I think if you're involved with team management, everybody feels that energy and the attention that the whole country brings to this game. And this is a country-wide event, and people around the world follow the game too. So it's something everybody should just savor and enjoy. And boy, I'm looking forward to that kickoff. I wish kickoff was right around the corner. Actually,
we're doing the countdown. It's about 49 hours plus now, and we're eager for that countdown. Are you enjoying this? I mean, it was obvious the emotion that you exhibited when you raised the 12th man flag at that NFC Championship game. Do you enjoy the other things that surround it, like sitting down with me right now? Because everyone thought of you as somebody who didn't like doing interviews. Why have you chosen to embrace this aspect?
Well, I think, you know, this is such a special year, and I think people do want to hear from the team owner what it's like to be involved with the franchise and helping the franchise succeed, and what a special year this has been. And it was just great to be up there raising the 12th man flag and hear, you know, the thank yous and the fan support for all you put a lot of hard work into getting your franchise to the point we are this year, and it's just very rewarding to hear the positive fan support for what you've been trying to accomplish, and for the franchise, and just to hear the roar of the crowd in Quest Field, you know, at kickoff, and then just the celebration when the game was over, how amazing that was. And I'm just very hopeful on Sunday, you know, and then Monday when we come back to Seattle, we'll have something even greater.
I think 2 days ago was the 10-year anniversary of when the moving vans packed up for Anaheim. Were you brought into this reluctantly into the ownership? And talk a little bit, since that marked that anniversary, that 10-year anniversary, just talk a little bit about the genesis of you with this team.
That was a situation where obviously, you know, I wasn't the owner of the team at that point, and the team, the previous owner, Mr. Baring, was in the process of moving, trying to move the team to, I think it was Anaheim, and some civic leaders came to me and said, you know, the league has basically told us they're, you know, they don't want the move to happen. We don't want it to happen. Would you consider being the owner? And anytime you think about owning a professional sports franchise, it's a real commitment of time, energy, and enthusiasm. And I already owned one, and I thought, No. I've also at that point I had enjoyed some Seahawks football, and I thought, God, it'd be great to be able to help the franchise succeed in Seattle. So I got excited about it, but then I knew we needed a new facility to really make the economics work, and we were able to have a public referendum on that. And got approval for that by a very thin margin. If anybody remembers, I think it was 0.5% or less. And we had a big celebration when that happened. So it's been, in one way it seems a long time ago, 10 years ago, but another way it doesn't seem that long ago that we just had the vote to approve the Quest Field.
Yeah, and Quest Field has played such a huge role in this team's success. Now we're on the road. We're in a stadium where there are going to be more Steeler fans than Seahawk fans. What's that going to be like for you now?
Well, that's the rumor. There's going to be more Steelers fans. Although I hear a lot of the independent fans saying that actually they're going to root for the when the game starts they're going to root for the Seahawks.
I don't think
anybody should underestimate the loudness of the Seahawks fans that are going to be there. So it's going to be really interesting to see that unfold.
Paul, it's a pleasure. I'm glad to finally meet you in person. I've enjoyed the couple opportunities we've had to have you on the show.
All right, Dory.
Okay, thank you so much. The owner of the Seattle Seahawks, Paul Allen, joining us.
What an honor for me. I cannot tell you. If you told me when I was a kid growing up in Ballard that I'd do interviews like that someday. That was crazy. And it was, especially now with his passing, it was just very special for me to be able to sit down with Paul Allen. Next up in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
As I told you at the beginning of the show, we were all flying back from London on our pre- and post-game crew. We had just landed in the Minneapolis airport, settled in to grab a bite to eat, and that's when the breaking news hit that Seahawks owner Paul Allen was dead at the age of 65, and a man that I consider one of my professional mentors and was an instrumental part of the Seahawks for most of their history. He was the vice president of communications. If you go to CenturyLink Field, you walk into the Gary Wright press box, and Gary Wright joins us here on Cairo Radio. My friend, it's always great to talk with you.
You know, it's great to talk to you. It's just too bad it's this kind of circumstance, especially, what a great victory and what a great experience for the Seahawks organization and all the 12s to come off that London game and then to have this happen. It's like the rug was just pulled out from under you. When I first heard about it yesterday, it was an absolute shock.
Well, and Gary, you were there through the Ken Behring years. And just explain to my listeners how close this team was to being the Anaheim Seahawks.
Well, there's no question. I mean, it was really a very sad and low point in the franchise's history that something that was kind of a crown jewel would be taken out of this region and moved. It just shouldn't happen. But it was going to. And Pete Von Reichbauer steps in and he gets John Nordstrom to help. And then they convince this gentleman who all he wanted to do was good for the community. I don't think he had any interest in owning a pro football team. He had a basketball team he loved. And they convince him to do it, and the only way he was going to do it is if the community told him they really want this team to stay by building a new stadium, and the rest is history.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, it was at the point where moving vans had already carted stuff out of Kirkland. Didn't the team even have some practices down in Anaheim?
Yeah, they did. It was off-season workouts, but it was down there. They had moved into the Rams' old practice facility at a elementary school, and it was a tough time. And ironically, Dennis Erickson had been hired as the coach, and being a Northwest guy from Everett, it was kind of his dream job. And all of a sudden, he finds himself being down in Southern California too, and he's not a happy guy.
So as this process was unfolding, because you were with the team almost since the inception, and you knew what the fan support was like, and you knew that you know, that this was a civic gem, such an asset. I mean, to have Paul Allen swoop in, because I know it couldn't have been easy for you the Baring years. I know they weren't easy for me. And to have somebody come in, because the, you know, the story on Paul Allen was he put good people in place and he pretty much let them do his job. How hands-on was he once he got the organization?
You know, he really wasn't. I mean, he certainly gave you every resource and every tool to do your job. But like you said, you know, he surrounded himself with good people, and then let them delegate and let them, you know, have their people do their job. I mean, I wasn't that close to him. I wasn't on that first level.
Right.
I was one of the guys that was getting delegated to by somebody else. But every once in a while, you know, our paths would cross and, you know, would be able to carry on a good conversation about one thing or another. And as time went on, I mean, he just embraced it more and more and more.
Yeah, and like you said, he was a basketball guy, and the NBA was his passion. The NFL was more a gift to the region if he could get the city and the voters to partner on it with him, right?
Yeah, there was no question about that. And you know, it all turned out for the best. And, I mean, what an owner. I mean, you couldn't. If you were to dream up an owner, you'd dream up Paul Allen. And, you know, just all the stuff he's done for not only professional sports in this region, but everything else. I mean,
yeah.
That's why I say it's just such a shock to lose somebody so so important to this region. And, you know, his legacy will live absolutely forever.
Oh, yeah.
The things that he's accomplished.
No, without question. Any particular stories that come to mind when...
You know what? The one thing I was thinking about, every once in a while I'd get an email from him and you know, asking about something or whatever. And so I get this email with that's talking about jibs and tacks and anemometers and things like that, and I'm going, wait a minute, I think he's sending this to the wrong guy. and I do a quick ask a couple people, you know, what's going on here, and he goes, oh, Paul's involved in this America's Cup team called World One, and the CEO is a guy named Gary Wright.
Oh.
So I write back to Paul. I said, Mr. Allen, I think you have the wrong Gary Wright here. And, of course, he got a chuckle out of it. So
we have the Dreamweaver Gary Wright. We got the Seahawk exec legend Gary Wright and an America's Cup Gary Wright.
Yeah.
What a name. What a name you have. And you know what, Gary? I also know. I mean, I don't know if Paul Allen ever did any other local radio interviews. I have not heard of it. I could be wrong. He sat down with me at the Seahawks' first Super Bowl in Detroit, and I'm pretty sure you made that happen. Did you?
Well, I was probably involved in it, yes. But, you know, other people always make it happen. I like to stay in the background and let the stars do their thing.
Okay, well, I always like to give gratitude to people who have done me such solid. So
you're very gracious.
Well, no, look, the thing about you, Gary, and I've told you this many, many times, you treated me exactly the same when I was an 18-year-old intern at an Everett radio station as you did when I was a Cairo talk host and Seahawk pre- and post-host, and there's no greater tribute to the equanimity of a person than that. You treated everybody the exact same, regardless of their, you know, their place in life.
Well, Dory, I really appreciate that. That's very kind of you to say. And like I said, this is I certainly enjoy talking about Paul Allen. I have so much admiration and respect for him, but it's just a sad thing to have it be talking about it like this.
But what a culture of winning. Only three playoff wins before Paul Allen, and then one of the best teams in the league. That's one thing we can say about the man from just a sports standpoint, that he knew at the very top how to build a culture of winning with the people he hired and the vision he inspired.
For sure. No question about it.
Gary, it's always wonderful talking with you, buddy.
All right, Dory. Okay, thank you very much.
There you go. Gary Wright, former Seahawks vice president. The press box at CenturyLink Field is the Gary Wright press box, and he's one of the great sports executives that I've ever known. That is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news. Then we're going to count down our favorite sound bites of the day. Awesome audio. Next. Getting close to count down our favorite sound bites of the day. So you had the CBS reporter who mentioned, I see on CNN right now, they have, they're all over Trump calling Stormy Daniels horse face.
Along with her third-rate lawyer.
Yeah. Well, the creepy porn lawyer. He's the creepy porn lawyer. Yeah,
yes.
He's CPL. Okay. So, right after the judge threw out her lawsuit and ordered her to pay all of Trump's legal fees, here's the entire tweet from Donald Trump. Federal judge throws out Stormy Daniels lawsuit versus Trump. Trump is entitled to full legal fees. Great. Now I can go after Horseface and her third-rate lawyer in the great state of Texas. She will confirm the letter she signed. She knows nothing about me. A total con.
I find this funny. I know. I have a question for you, though. I have a question. And this is a real question. I do have a question.
Okay.
So I know there are oftentimes people say, well, how come people, you know, these Trump detractors, how come they just can't throw him a bone? How come you can't point out the great things that he does?
Yeah.
Now, do you think he has any responsibility in that? That whether it's calling someone horse face or whatever? Can you have it both ways? I mean, the things that I want to know just from you.
Yes. Okay. I can laugh at this because I think calling a porn star who has been talking ad nauseum on CNN and MSNBC about his anatomy, I find him calling her horse face now to be funny. That's just me. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, I laugh at his ridiculousness. Sure. I will criticize what should be criticized. I hate the fact that out today, our nation's deficit is up 17% versus a year ago. And there are few issues that I care about more than our $21 trillion in debt, and he better start bringing that down. I hate that. I don't want an economy built on debt like Obama and George W. Bush did.
But I wonder could it be that if he were to just, you know, like zip the lips for a second, that people could actually say, hey, there is something that's really good about what you just did?
No.
Ursula,
this is what everybody's missing. The people in the heartland, in middle America, I'm dead serious about this. They see him call Stormy Daniels horse face. They do what I do. They laugh. They think that's funny. And there are a lot of people who say he gets S done. By S, I mean stuff. He gets stuff done. And he's the economy. Did you see the number of jobs that are open right now?
Mm-hmm.
It's an all-time high. There are more jobs available than people looking for jobs. The economy is roaring. Business leaders have unprecedented confidence. The unemployment rate at record lows, especially in minority communities. And there are just a lot of people. My taxes are lower. I got a job when I was unemployed for 3 years before he was elected. And there are just a bunch of people who say, he gets S done. I don't care if he calls a porn star who made fun of his private parts horse face.
You answered the question.
Yeah. So the thing is, it is
a distraction in that if people say, hey, how come you can't throw him a bone or how come you can't point out the great things? I think in some ways, I mean, some of the things he does just helps obscure that.
By the way, that's what he threw Stormy Daniels, apparently. Okay, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Billionaire Jeff Bezos is the most richest man on earth. And he was at an international event earlier today, and he says that space is now his most important work.
Number 3.
Now, I actually think it's the most important work I'm doing. Two kids in their dorm room created Facebook, which has a $500 billion market cap. It's a giant company. two kids in their dorm room today can't do anything big in space.
I'm sorry, there's the annoying music behind these sound bites, but he says that that's where mankind is going to have to go to survive as a species.
I'd love for there to be a trillion humans in the solar system. We can't do that on Earth. But we can do it in the solar system.
So he wants to export all the great things we're doing now. On Earth. Yeah, the space is going to love getting us. Really? You said you guys here? At number two, this is another Trump soundbite. This is when Elizabeth Warren, it was proven just what an absolute fraud her Native American claims were. And Trump said this because they said, well, she's got maybe 1/1,000th Native American. She is less than the average white person, it looks like, from her DNA test. Are you going to pay the $1 million that you said you'd give her if she was Native American? Trump said this.
Number two.
She owes the country an apology. What's the percentage? 1/1,000?
I don't have the exact number.
Okay, tell me, when you have the percentage, tell me what the percentage is.
What about the money
is.
That you told her you would...
You mean if she gets the nomination in a debate where I was going to have her tested, I'll only do it if I can test her personally. Okay, that will not be something I enjoy doing either.
Find that funny. At number one, Senator Bill Cassidy. There are still protesters in D.C. about Kavanaugh. And there was a woman. She had two little girls with her, maybe 6 and 4 years old. And she challenged Republican Senator Bill Cassidy because he voted for Kavanaugh. And his response was classic.
Number one.
Senator Cassidy, can you please apologize to my children for ruining their futures?
Hey, guess what? If in the future somebody makes it, I know your parents are using you as tools.
No, but we're not using them as tools.
In the future, if somebody makes an allegation against you and there's no proof for it, you will be okay.
And you should hope that they go through a full due process.
And that's how you handle that kind of protester. Our favorite sound bites of the day brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash. Today's sign next. Down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And I want to thank everybody who came on with me today, the original Seahawks owner, John Nordstrom, to talk about, it was a blow when we heard about the passing of Paul Allen. And I'll talk about that more in just a couple of moments here. But first, we got some other news to get to with today's edition of
Today's Sign that the end is near.
Today's sign the world is soon coming to an end. Dateline Vermont, where a mom is furious after her 10-year-old daughter and all of her fifth grade classmates were given a survey at school that asked them about their sexual history, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Here's some of the questions on the survey. Fifth graders, have you been in a romantic relationship? By relationship, we mean more than friends, like having a partner for planned events, like a school dance, going to the movies, or having a sexual partner? Fifth graders! The mom said, my daughter's 10 years old. A sexual partner at 10 years old would be called sexual abuse, the mom said. The survey was administered by a group that says they advocate against gender-based violence. Oh, yeah, let's put some of these social justice warriors in the school. They said that it was supposed to help the school come up with prevention programming. The mom claims that the survey also asks the children if they've had sex. The director of the survey company denies that, but she did say it's asking a range of behaviors. It's a general question that asks about romantic relationships. Yes, it does say sexual relationships, but it's not asking about specific acts. Fifth graders being asked about, oh man, I'm glad my kids are grown. I don't know what I would do if I saw these people with these agendas pushing them on 10-year-old kids. If that was my kid, I really don't know what I would do as a parent. It's just insanity.
Today's sign story number two. I'm going to tell you the story before I give you the dateline. See if you can guess where this happened. A father and son had been having an ongoing feud, and it ended with quite the fight. The father is 76-year-old Douglas Ferguson. He and his son had been fighting. The son was mowing the front lawn of a home, according to the police report. The son had to defend himself when the father came after him with a chainsaw. The son defended himself against the attack by running over his dad with the lawnmower. The injuries that the dad suffered led to his leg being amputated. When authorities arrived, they found the dad bleeding from his leg and his head. Doctors amputated the leg. The two men had had a long-running feud. They don't say what sparked the chainsaw attack, but they do say that the dad with the chainsaw was the aggressor, so the son with the lawnmower is not being charged. The dad is, for initiating everything. The dad was served with violation of probation warrant on a previous charge of aggravated assault. They don't say what sparked the long-running feud between father and son. That's right out of a Norman Rockwell painting. Dad attacking his son with a chainsaw. Kid running over dad's leg with a lawnmower. Okay, Dateline, where do you think that happened? It's not fair. I don't mean to stereotype the people of Tennessee because of that story. They're good people there. And actually, they are. I know some people from Tennessee who are truly salt of the earth. All right, and all that is today's sign, the end is near. Before I get out of here this afternoon, Paul Allen, who passed away yesterday, of course, was a huge fan of another native son of our city, Jimi Hendrix. The Mopop Museum at the Seattle Center. Of course, it was the Jimi Hendrix Experience Music Project when it first started. Paul Allen loved playing the guitar. And he made an impact on my life because the Seahawks have given me some of the most indelible memories of my life. Both as a kid sitting up in the 300 level of the Kingdome and as an adult being able to cover all three of their Super Bowls and then being in London this last weekend. And none of that would have been possible if it weren't for at least the recent experiences, the adult experiences, if it wasn't for Paul Allen saving this team in Seattle. And to me, it's also a reminder. Every day is a gift. And depending on where you are in your faith, to me, every day is a gift from God. And a guy I was sitting next to on the plane yesterday, he was on a business trip to Seattle. He was going to the Microsoft campus today. And said it'll be interesting after their founder having passed away. And he said, yeah, I know Paul Allen had a lot of great days, greater than I, but not tomorrow. And he said it just with message that every day is a gift. Maximize it. Let's live this life. Ron and Don Show's coming up next. I'll see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Anna.
I feel my job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
You got your work cut out for you, Bird.
Now that was unwholesome. That was not cultural.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.